Many of you know Leon Jaworski as a special investigator and prosecutor chosen in the Watergate matters. People even more in the know Leon Jaworski, got his reputation as the prosecutor of the Nuremberg war criminal trials. He's written a book everybody, I think, should read. Crossroads is the name of it. A little subhead says, a man of destiny, a man of God, his faith guided him through the darkest hours of our nation's history. I'll read you something. This is Jaworski. The title of this chapter is In God We Trust. He says, in our precious land, moral decay must not gain a foothold. Now, some people, when you use the word moral, all they can think of is avoiding some little old piddling sins that are much more exciting to Christians that grew up in the church and never tasted them than those that are outside. Now, God goes to the root of the matter. He takes care of the inner core, the surface will take care of itself. And God's an expert on Pharisee-type treatment that he described as painting the outside of a grave white on the outside when inside it's full of dead men's bones and uncleanness. Moral decay goes to the root of the matter. Sure, it affects behavior, but that's the result, not the cause. It's as stupid as the diagnosis of the laws of the offerings in the Old Testament, because God takes us where we are. He let man come back to him by starting where man was with the trespass offering, the little piddling things that in his dumb brain he figured out were wrong. When he grew up a little bit and got closer to God, that was followed with a sin offering that took care of the condition of sin, covered even the sins of ignorance, embraced the reality that man is a sinner not because he sins, rather he sins because he's a sinner. From there he moved to the meat offering and the peace offering and then the burnt offering. In that outer court dealing with God, he moved from sin or from trespass to sin to burnt offering. I want to challenge you with something. Go through the Old Testament from front to back and up and down, and sideways and crossways, and inside and outside. When God talks of the offerings, he starts with the burnt offering, and he ends up with the trespass offering. That's on the periphery of his vision. But when he tells man the order to practice it, he lets man, and indeed demands that man, starts with the trespass, comes to the sin, and moves to the burnt offering. Let me repeat it. But when God talks about it, he starts with the burnt offering and moves to the trespass. But when he gets done talking, and the talk tells us the procedure to practice the laws of the offering, we start with the trespass and move inward to the burnt. What's most precious to him, he talks about first. What's necessary but least important, really, in his value system, made necessary because of our stupidity, is what he ends up with. But because we're such stupid, dumb sheep, he makes us start where we are, and we only move to the burnt offering after that's taken care of, because the burnt offering speaks of that which is precious to God, not that which his wrath falls on. And I don't want to get lost in the cheap shot use of the word moral today. I drove down the road last night and saw a bumper sticker. The feminists, the real moral majority. And I thought, you know, if we're going to talk about what God really cares about, those two would be like jousters tilting in the corral. They'd never get to the fireplace and the den and the hearth of fellowship with God in His house. They just, you know, waste their energy out there in the barnyard where the rest of the stuff is. Majoring and minors. When I talk of morality, and when this man talks morality, we're going a lot deeper than that. That's why some people are wasting their energy going all across the land, swatting flies, while Satan does his work at the core, knowing the flies will die when you shut off, or the swatters of flies will die when you shut off everything else, and then the flies got a free air to run around in, dirty air. Now, that long speech he didn't say. I just want to make sure you understand what we're talking about when we talk about moral decay. Let me tell you something. We can lose the family, and I don't want us to. We can lose the family. There wasn't much family life in the French underground that resisted to the very end the Nazi boot crushing France. There wasn't a great deal of family life among the Christians sneaking around to meet with threat of death in the catacombs beneath Rome in the heyday of Rome's power. But the church conquered and Rome fell. Now, a shallow listener will say, Scott doesn't believe in the family. I just walked out of a house and had a friend say to me, you'll always be okay as long as those two are alive, my mother and dad. Don't talk to me about a family. I'm a product of one of the best ones. As far as I'm concerned, the product of one of the best families is a better expert on somebody trying to put one together that hasn't lived long enough to know what it's about. So I don't want anybody saying, I don't believe in the family. But that's not the answer to America. And the church can survive without it, and the devil can survive with the strongest family units in America. It's still fruit, not root. It's still surface and not core. It's still effect and not cause. And God, as Watchman Nee says, always goes to the root of the matter, to the cause. He's more interested in what causes an act than He is the way the act looks. God's a God who looks on the heart. If anybody could ever convince the world that family life would save the world, the greatest family counselor in the world would become the devil, or the devil would become that. Just think on that for a minute. If the structure, because that's what it is, a structural frame, if the structure can save America, don't ever think the devil doesn't know how to make families come together. In fact, I remember when people thought television would save the family because it kept them sitting around and looking at it. A Christian family is not the cause of Christianity, it's the defect of Christians who live their family relationships God's way. I repeat, I'm not anti-family. I'm the product of one. How many of you are the product of a family where your mother and father have lived together, serving God most of those years, married 54 years? So I believe in family. But I refuse to major in minors. Let me tell you something. You take away the family structure, and the church can still survive. You take away the Constitution of the United States and the First Amendment, and the church will have to be caught away because Antichrist can come on the scene. You notice I didn't say the church couldn't survive. The church can survive as it has. It survived in China. It didn't have the First Amendment. It survived in Africa. But God's plan for the end of the age which includes keeping a door open for the gospel to get out, is protected by that First Amendment. The evil that would destroy religious freedom in America is a more potent weapon and a more disastrous enemy in its potential than the breakdown of the family. It didn't take Christianity to tell the hippies that free love didn't work. Practice it long enough and it dimmed the pleasure and produced an outbreak of herpes. And without much help from God, even the hippies decided a one-on-one permanent relationship, whether they had the paper or not, was better than the stuff they were tasting in an overreaction against legalism. And some of the free love hippies who wore themselves out in that pattern without much help from God or Christianity became proponents of a one-on-one permanent relationship. I repeat, it's the devil's trick to make Christians shallow-minded, simple-minded, one-sentence answerers of every problem. God's a lot more complicated than the formula Christianity people make him. Moral decay embraces a departure from the grandeur of a statement like Jefferson, who didn't even claim the baptism of the Holy Spirit and the insight from God. The many modern preachers swatting at pimples on a wart. And yet he could say, we deem these rights, certain rights, inalienable, granted to man by their Creator. It's that departure that's the moral decay of this land. It took me a long time to read a three-word sentence. But I want you to understand what the decay is. A decay that lets the end justify the means. A decay from progressive education coming out of the 1920s. When the end product of Cecil Rhodes' mastermind out of South Africa and a theologian who took a liberal interpretation of the Sermon on the Mount, who has some dizzyingly stupid modern evangelical preachers that will dare to say God's going to save the world by love, hogwash and pickle juice. He'll save the world when in Armageddon he comes and the sword goes out of his mouth to slay those that don't recognize him. Love opened the door to save some out of the world. And a loving Christ was crucified. Say, don't you believe in love? Sure do. But I'm not dumb. And I repeat, there are some people who will miss the rapture because they believe in some kind of warped concept of love. They should stay here another 3 days to intercede for the salvation of Satan. It was a liberal teacher of the Sermon on the Mount who caught the fancy of the colonial world with an overproducing population of the British Empire, where the firstborn son inherited the homeland estate and the rest of the sons had to find a place to make it in the world. And they were taught, growing up, the children of rich families, that they had a moral duty to take their culture and knowledge and truth and justice and law and love to a heathen world. And the round table to the CFR that spawned a one world philosophy of peace and love that would usher in the kingdom by education and remove sin, which was ignorance, is a liberal theology that turns the other cheek until it becomes a flattened, rolled out newspaper, peddling one bit of garbage, save the world by loving it to death, to the absolute absence of truth, spawning the John Deweys and the cultural evolutionists who argue that to cope with constant change, the end justifies the means, and there are no absolute truths, but in our brilliance we've come to the knowledge everything is changing, so the only unchanging value is how to cope with change. So the ever-present adjusters that can find a new change to bring the displacement of friction and settle it all down into the status quo, so the money mogul international bankers can have a bunch of kids that play the way they're supposed to play and line their banks, conquered the minds of a generation. Sin's not ignorance. Sin's a bend in our nature. To rebel against God's absolute control, surfboard on by a powerful surfboarder, Satan himself, who not only helps us go our stupid way, which is to turn to our own way, but helps us convince ourselves that God's on our side and our wrong way is the right way. You know, I'm only going to read a line or two. I mean, if I preach everything he's inspired me, we'd be here all night. In our precious land, moral decay must not gain a foothold. If it does, it may spread like a cancerous growth. Like the news media. They have the same point of view on everything. How long has it been since you've ever changed channels, since you got those buttons, you can just change them, try it. How long has it been since you could sit down and have ABC, you know, they even do it the same way structurally. I mean, you got this guy on that one giving the commentary and this guy on that one. The only difference is some have horn-rimmed glasses, some have beards, some have wrinkled face, some are cherubic-faced. Some speak staccato, and some speak in droning monotone. And some try to sound like God, whatever that sounds like. But have you ever flipped channels and had this channel saying this diametrically opposed to that one? Isn't it amazing how in the preparation of a news story every day, they can all come to the same evaluation? You ever notice that? Isn't it amazing that in every day with events around the globe, they have the same pro and con and the same bend of the news in the appearance of objectivity to produce this conclusion? Well, they're smart. And they're really smart to come to that same conclusion. Now, doesn't it ever dawn on you that they're like a bunch of stupid little old birds in a nest getting the same worm dropped in all their mouths by some central news service that interprets it for them because they don't have enough brains to do it? It must not gain a foothold. Sorry, Leon Jaworski, it has. But David made old Goliath get a butthold on the ground while he knocked him over it and lose his toehold. How many of you know that? I lost 90% of my Christian audience other than the ones I teach when I said that. Give me a chance, folks. Stick around. I'll say it once out of every 3 hours instead of 30 times. And eventually, once out of 3 days, you just stay around a while. In our precious land, moral decay must not gain a foothold. If it does, it may spread like a cancerous growth. The antidote. You want to know what he says the antidote is? Huh? You interested? The antidote to this cancer? The church smiling, drippingly sweet. You know, the meat offering in the Old Testament, since it talked about the law of the offerings, the meat offering above all offerings is the type of a dedicated life. Is to have no honey in it. Forbidden. No honey. The type of the dedicated life, no honey. How do you get honey? Honey turns sweet under heat. Do I need to apply it? Sticky, drippy, sweet. No cakes baked with honey. No, you heard me preach on this once. No sweetie pie religion. The antidote, Jaworski's antidote. You know why he knew the antidote? He clearly says, the church could have stopped Hitler. He researched it. The church could have prevented Nazi Germany. It had the power and it didn't. Because who would believe such terrible potential in such an educated leadership? The scientists of Germany, the brains of the world, the Nobel Prize winners that ultimately will be tried at Nuremberg. Culture, education. The Germany that produces the minds that led the way even in subsequently neo-Orthodox theology, but they were leading the way in liberal theology until the truth of sin's reality opened their eyes. He knew the church could have stopped it. He saw what the church didn't do, and he saw the ineffectiveness of the church sweetie pie baked with honey. In our precious land, moral decay must not gain a foothold. Now, who's a better expert? He tried them. If it does, it may spread like a cancerous growth. The antidote. You want to know what it is? Did you get in close enough? Come on in here, Peter. The antidote. See if you can read it. Can you read that right under this finger here? The antidote. The church militant. You hear that word? The church militant. And the question, whither goest thou? The church militant. Aren't you glad you had the good sense to tune in the right place? Many years ago, I observed that most people follow a happening of God after He's already passed by. They would come down from the mount where Elijah was and never ever understand who God was, and not even meet Him. They wouldn't even wait for the other two, be it the fire, the wind, or the earthquake. Ever after, there'd be hunters after fire, hunters after wind. I know a lot of people that hunt the wind, and hunters after earthquakes. The burners, the gasslers, and the shakers. That's their religion. They would never ever find God. They're reactors to His actions. And let a newspaper say, earthquake here, here they go to be shaken by God. Let the newspaper say the wind's blowing, here they go to be gassed. And they get it all right. I mean, the hot air recipients. Or the fire's over here, and there they go. I mean, there's a busy shaking, getting gassed, burning. They can't hear the still small voice. Chasers after effects. I noticed years ago, the minute some pioneer was taken by God to a place ripe for a harvest, and the harvest came, then every single exploiter in the religious world tried to get in on the act. But they got there too late. They just became sort of second-rate imitators of what God had done when he thrust the sickle in. Because Satan's not omniscient. He doesn't know what God's going to do. But he reacts after the first jump on him. He is ready for the second-rate people that didn't know how to be led of God. They just had to find the earthquake, the fire, and the wind when it blew. Some wise old saint said to me, determine which way God's moving and go there. I mean, catch the wave as it's rising. Not because you've seen the peak after you wake out of a dope and sleep, sunburned on the beach, and say, hey, there's a wave, and the time you get on it, it's already dwindling. Catch it on the rise. Aren't you glad you got in early? So that when you stand over there, you can say, I may have a lot of faults in my Christian experience, but there must have been something that sensed where God was going, and I was there to go with him.